Coming to you live from the Lower Library Sound Studio, today we are going to be creating our creative masterpiece. We present to you a podcast on the Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. Our participating members today are myself, Sam Wisnowski,
Esther Duomo,
Oscar Bell,
and Satchel Shiva.
This is all of our first attempts at using the sound studio. We believe we've set up everything correctly, and we apologize for any background noise. Kicking us off today is going to be Satchel.
Absolutely. Where do we come from? This has been a question that humans have asked seemingly forever. And we'll sort of see, especially almost 1,000 years ago, the idea of purpose has really guided human expansion, especially with the Enlightenment in Europe. It's been used much less as an example of this is how we got here and much more of this is the path to the future. It's been used to as the basis for many credited both wondrous and horrendous things in human history, and was largely undisputed until Darwin published Origin of Species and provided a more seemingly scientific evolutionary basis for creation. And slowly, especially many years after after it was published, that framework was adopted by many of the powerful governments and people in power today, and is sort of used for similar purposes in modern day culture. And we're sort of hoping to compare both paradigms and both sort of authorities on human expansion and creation, and use them to really argue the validity of, is this really the correct moral way to move forward in the world? We're sort of hoping less to touch on the validity of both approaches, not talk about definitively where humans come from, but talk about how each approach and how each basis for origin has been used historically and how it's being used today, and then maybe compare from morality or even just the usefulness of the two paradigms. And kicking us off with that debate, Oscar Bao.
Great introduction, Satchel.
Thank you, Oscar.
I think the thing we want to touch on today, or at least what I think we need to touch on today, is that, you know, after Darwin published his seminal piece, Origin of Species, a lot of people use that as a basis to kind of attack religion as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. That religion is a dangerous thing. Nietzsche said that religion is for the weak, mm-hmm. God is dead, right? These are arguments powered by the fact that creationism is no longer a paradigm after it gets supplanted by Charles Darwin. But I think one thing that we want to stress tonight is that, you know, there is a danger to science as well, right? Like, there, when people believe in science too much, is there a danger to that? How do we really compare the view of, people believing in science versus people believing in religion? How do we compare that? And I guess personally, I take the view that I'm agnostic, right?
Right.
And I take the view that science is dangerous, but also changeable, and, mm-hmm. and which is controllable. That's my take.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like there's so many instances before, especially in Darwin's time, of science being like this set in stone thing of like, oh, there are particles in the air that are making us sick. But they know there's something more, they just don't know exactly what it is. Like, of learning, like, what bacteria is and so forth. And with that danger of science is, like, super strong, like, people in society of science and being like, oh, this is what it is and this is what we've done for the last 10 years, so it has to be true. There might be something more, but we're not gonna discover it for a long time. And then the danger of religion being like, if the Pope or this prophet says this one thing, then this has to be true no matter what. Now I think we're at a time where it's a lot more, everyone can kind of believe what they want to believe in to a certain extent, which can be dangerous, but we'll talk about that more later on.
Yeah, I think a major danger of both science and a danger of religion is simply the fact that too much certainty in one can lead to negative things. And then, of course, also if you take things to the extreme. So, for example, after Darwin, we see people using Darwinism and social Darwinism to justify numbers of horrendous things. You know, we have Nazi Germany, we have Soviet Russia, we have this new movement of eugenics, but, you know, the Bible is not, or religion as a whole, is not infallible either. We see things, people using the Bible to justify the Crusades, to justify slavery, to justify all other manner of horrible things. And both of these, both the Origin of Species and numerous religious texts as well as religious leaders, their words and their the meaning behind those words are ultimately interpreted by humans. So as much as we can say, like, oh, science is this, like, completely sure thing, unless we're talking about pure math, there's some level of interpretation going on. And then additionally, when people stop being skeptic, we start running into problems. And so when people stop asking questions and are just take things at face value without looking into it, and I think we see that a little bit more in the past 50 years, where science for a little bit had become the end-all be-all, where scientists said it was okay and therefore it was. This is, we're coming up on Silent Spring is a great example of that. And of course that's a big danger as well. So starting to get around to this and talking about more modern day, how would Darwin approach the modern day? What would have changed if Darwin was never introduced? What would happen if Darwin was still alive today? I'm going to pass the conversation back around to anyone who wants to take it.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. I think it's so interesting thinking about the absence of Darwin in modern day, because seemingly everything, at least in even this week's news cycle, has been dominated by an evolutionary, almost science-based approach. Like, Trump made headlines this week talking about how seemingly scientific studies found that Tylenol causes autism. A few years ago, a similar sentiment around vaccines causing autism sort of spread, and a bunch of people made very personal choices on their safety based on that logic, sort of clinging to the science behind it. I think as we've sort of touched on, science has become almost a higher authority, and seen as by some as an infallible process that the results dictate.
And I think that's a really good example of people, again, using science to warp their belief systems, where I think especially the vaccines cause autism, it would be an example of, you know, this rhetoric being spread and someone taking their own personal experience, which is, oh, you know, autism kind of starts manifesting itself in like 12 to 24 weeks, I want to say, which is soon after newborns receive vaccines. And so people make this assumption, even though it's not based in science, and say, oh, you know, I've heard this thing that's supposedly from science, and then they just say it becomes science, becomes the all-authoritative force of science.
I think it's interesting that Sam started the topic off with Darwinism in the modern day, but we kind of just drifted into science, because I do think that there isn't, it's an interesting distinction between Darwinism versus science. I mean, on the one hand, you're kind of right to substitute science for Darwinism for science, because, or the science for Darwinism, because Darwin kind of defined the modern science. With Origin of Species, he introduced so many scientific methods that, you know, some scientists argue that his biggest contribution is not explain the theory of Origin of Species, but rather all the empirical methods that he introduced to the scientific community and then that they used. But I do think, I guess, in a narrow sense, Darwinism it more represents the thoughts, the theories of Darwin. And then I'm curious to, like, because I think that if Darwin was never introduced, I'm personally a believer that if, like, things are bound to happen, like, someone else is bound to would have discovered made the claim that we all came from the same species instead of being created by an extraterrestrial being. But I do think that Darwinism as a whole, like, the theme of natural selection and whatnot, it ever since it's been introduced, it it's used to justify so many things, right? We talked about interpretation. Different people interpret Darwinism differently, as we've read in the book that, you know, some in the 1920s or something, that people, the industrialists used it to justify that, oh, you know, the lower class people are just being naturally selected out, as in, yeah, that they're using that to justify them exploiting the people. So I don't think anything would change if Darwinism was never introduced, because it would just be another, it would just have another name, but it would be the same thing.
Yeah, like, agreeing with you, Oscar, there's, what was the scientist's name, like Wallace or something, who was also discovering natural selection around the same time as Darwin. We would have discovered it somehow. Maybe we would be a little bit behind in science, but someone would have picked up the pace. There's always someone who is going to be curious enough and, like, go-getter enough to look into science and think more deeply than what they're being told. In modern day, we see that for, like, good and also bad, of, like, people thinking too deeply but not actually critically thinking and learning and doing experiments. But there would be another Darwinism.
I don't know. It's interesting because it's kind of like, as you said, where Darwin, and especially The Origin of Species, kind of introduces this idea of analytical philosophy or analytical science, where he's using, you know, inductive and deductive reasoning in such a, like, spelled out manner. You know, to us it's repetitive, or it's maybe a slow paced, or, you know, it's dated even. But to the people of the time, if the method of evolution, or the theory of evolution, hadn't been presented in that manner, I wonder if it would have had the same effect on the like, entire paradigm shifting away from religion, or away from creationism and thereby religion, that it did. I think if it were written in a less convincing way, or simply that the science was presented, I wonder if Darwin would have ended up like Galileo.
Interesting. I think there is a very interesting word I used there, Sam, deductive. Because, you know, Darwin, I think, like you said, he represents the deductive methods of science, but the science have to be deductive, right? Can it be inductive? Is there a place? Philosophy, for example, philosophy as a whole is a very inductive subject. A lot of philosopher believes that, you know, you should be able to derive every concept, axiom, or whatever, just by doing thought experiments, by conjuring up from nothing. Some people count philosophy as a form of science. It's very rigorous to some extent. Is there a place in the modern day that for and kind of inductive science, I guess, that science that doesn't necessarily rely on evidence,
I don't know, for me, I think it's so science is so intertwined with deductive reasoning that I really struggle to think that I just remember vividly, like, first day of mod sim, ZDR going on a big rant about science versus alchemy and why alchemy failed because, one, it doesn't have the same collaboration does, but science is built on the idea of reproducible results. So the idea is that you are as close to the physical world as possible, and therefore if you or whoever wants to reproduce the exact same results, you have to follow the exact same process. And if you follow the exact same process and you gain different results, then that is not science, and you have made some mistake, or you don't fully understand the principle you're claiming to introduce into the world. I think a large reason why Darwin was so hesitant to publish Origin of Species was, again, his work on evolution was at the time very, very limited and lacked a lot of reproducible results. He needed to really claim that it was a theory. Truthfully, I feel like religion almost falls into a more inductive category than science. I feel like science, especially today, I keep on going back to the Trump example, feels very inductive when it's being used to push an agenda of trying to push a final result and we've seen almost historically time and time again in the last 10 years that those results, when actually calculated, are not receiving support from a large base of the scientific community. And instead,
I don't know. I mean, I think there's this question of, is there a place for inductive science? And I think it's interesting because the definition of science has kind of fallen away from anything other than analytical science. So, for example, I think in the olden days, a lot of science was inductive, and inductive science was just what science was called. Or maybe deductive and inductive science. And as a society and as a technological society, we've really moved away from anything other than deductive science. So it's almost an oxymoron at this point. And I think a little bit later in this podcast, we're going to talk about if we've reached the final form of science, or we reject anything and everything that isn't provable. Now, there's a few things that could be wrong with this.
Really? Sorry. Do you think that's what we're defining science's final form as? Is something that you're saying that...
That can't be proven or doesn't have... That can't be proven through repeated experimentation.
Right.
Or doesn't have, like, a crap ton of evidence backing it up.
That's really interesting. I feel like that science is, like, first form, almost. Like, I feel like that's so core to the identity of science that... having something reproducible and so closely tied to, like, the physics of the world. Like, I don't really think of things that cannot be proven via the scientific method as being, like, impure science. I just think of it as not science.
But I guess it's kind of what I'm saying is, I think, like, then inductive science mm-hmm. is... kind of like an oxymoron, like that,
right,
is
exactly.
that a thing that even
yeah.
exists?
Yeah.
Like, by true. Our definition of science, is inductive science possible?
Right, but I feel like science has made that distinction hundreds of years ago.
I would say it's like not hundreds. I mean, there was bloodletting in, you know, the 1800s.
Right, but I think that was due to the same reproducibility being done, just through a much more horrendous and much more flawed framework. Such that, again, you're almost inductive. I think, from our perspective now, it's seen as inductive. But I would argue that the final form of science is continuing to realize, I think, our own biases and our own perspectives when we're trying to set up scientific experiments and continuously refine and become more and more basic and more universal as we gain a deeper understanding of everything through scientific results.
That's interesting. So you're saying that science as a... first of all, we're throwing the term around a lot, so I guess
right.
I want to define it a little bit. I think right now in the modern day context, science means the systematic method that we use to do experiments, derive conclusions from the experiments, and then make sure that the conclusions are sound based on the data that we collect. That's the modern day
yes.
definition of science. And I think... if I'm understanding it correctly, what Satchel and Sam, you are having disagreements about is, did this form of science, even though very primitive, exist in the 1800s or even before then? Because Satchel, you're saying that the people back then, they thought they were doing deductive science. Like, the scientists and the doctors back then thought they were, from their perspective, they're doing the exact same as what we're doing. Like, they're doing experiments, they're, like, collecting data, trials, whatever, but it's just that it led to bloodletting versus, I guess, Sam, your point is that science kind of went through a drastic change, and it wasn't there was a science before and then a science after, science now. Am I understanding you both correctly?
I think so. I think my main point, at least from what I interpreted the argument, was that science has always had some necessary component of induction to it. And I think Sam was arguing that as time goes on, that component will grow smaller and smaller and smaller. And I think I was saying something kind of similar, which is definitely from our perspective, looking back on scientific experiments from the last, like, recorded history, it certainly looks inductive because we have studies that can prove it wrong. But I don't think science was ever... meaningfully conducted with some inductive reason, like with some inductive motivation. Like, I don't think people knowingly were trying to say, oh, we know this is true, let's go and find evidence to support that, and then let's just call it science. And I think it would be foolish to imagine our own perspective now as saying, okay, well, those guys were clearly doing inductive reasoning, now we've got it. When people 100 years from now will probably look back at the results we're doing, the scientific studies we're doing, and still incorporating some level of human bias or trying to confirm some result. And I think the continual process for science, I don't see it ever approaching a final form, because I think we're always going to have some level of like confirmation bias that we're seeking to approve. And I feel like at every point in at least modern science, which I would stretch back to the last like 150 years, scientists have always had this mindset of, well, now we're finally purely deductive, and now finally we figured stuff out. And then they'll get a result that doesn't match up to what happened previously. And then eventually they'll realize, oh, now we need to adapt the whole framework of science again.
I think now we're just at a point where, like, before it seems like everyone is like, oh, this is what we're doing, this is science, and this is the right answer, and there's so much pushback whenever something is wrong. And I think now we're just more open to, there's always going to be something wrong, of there's always more things to explore, of like, we don't know how much of, like, scientific experts are always like, we don't know how much of the brain that we actually know about, or how much of the ocean or space, or etc. That we're never going to, similar to what Sam is saying, like, we're going to try and get smaller and smaller for that bias, but I don't think we're ever going to make it completely done, if that makes sense. Like, it's never going to be completely out of the way just because of how humans are. We always have a little bit of bias of what we believe is right or not.
I don't know. It's interesting. I guess my question would be, clearly, even if we're saying, okay, so the rough scientific process of somewhat deductive, but inevitably somewhat, or the primarily deductive, but somewhat inevitably inductive based on the paradigm we're in, process is what's getting us results, right? And theoretically, those results are comparable from 150 years ago with, you know, the things that they did back then. But I would say certainly something about our science today, our understanding of biology and chemistry, and for example, let's take, you know, sickness and disease and the treatments that they tried back then versus the treatments that exist now. Something happened that made those, that allowed us to make such big leaps. And I think what I would say is it was a change in the scientific method. And that somewhere in that scientific method, we switched from saying, oh, we believe that there are four systems of the human body, right? There was like black bile, green bile, blood, and phlegm, I think, something along those lines. And we need to... There are
more colors.
Maybe.
That was like fire, earth, water, or something.
That's Avatar. The four humors, yeah.
I think there's a difference between saying, we think these exist, and so we're going to try and put them in balance, versus like... Again, I think it's like asking questions rather than saying, like, do these exist? How can we prove their existence?
Right.
That's what we're coming from now. It's like, we have this hypothesis. How can we prove this hypothesis instead of taking it for granted? Like, like Oscar, you mentioned that they were doing like tests and evidence back in the day and that kind of stuff. But I wonder if there was like, you know, there was, I remember like one 14th, 15th century philosopher or scientist who dissected a bunch of human bodies and came to that conclusion. And then everyone was just like, okay, that's what exists in the human body for like the next 300 years. And maybe it's just that people didn't ask questions. People just took it for granted. And maybe that's what's beneficial about today's science. But I also wonder if there's just, people are always asking the why now. People are asking like for evidence and the why is it this way.
You know, I'm going to deliver a hot take. I think we have reached the final state of, to the stage of science. I think... Let me put it in this way. I think Esther and Satchel, I understand your point. You're saying that science is like a way that keeps on improving itself throughout the years, over the years, and there is never really a definitive form of like finitude, but rather like it keeps on evolving, right?
Right.
Borrowing from Darwin, it keeps on evolving, and whatever. I'm understanding you correctly.
Yes.
But I think that's based on the assumption that, like, science, as it, like, even back in the 1800s, the kind of deductions that the scientists used back then was not fundamentally dissimilar to what we try to do now. It's just collecting data and whatever. But I think, I guess, the thing that I believe, or what my hot take is, I think Darwin changed the paradigm of science. I think that it was not a gradual evolvement. It was that Darwin came out, and then there was a boom in scientific research and method. Because before then, scientists, I guess most, if not all of the scientists, all had a pre-baked in theory. They were all trying to prove why God created us, or how God created us. That's like they all had that baked into them since they were born, and they were just working with that preset. But ever since Darwin came out, I think that's the last kind of assumption that we tossed out. Like, ever since then, we are doubting everything. There is nothing. We've established the fact that there's nothing in this world that's not challengeable. We can be skeptical. I'm sorry. Oh. We can be skeptical about everything and anything. It's just that we need to kind of use data and then arrive at the good, at a good conclusion. So I think science, from that context, as it reaches final form, that we have tossed out the one final assumption that we've always been making since the year zero, and that if so long as we are able to be skeptical about anything, I think that's the final stage of science.
I think you just have bias of living in what you think is the modern day. We're always going to have skepticism, but as long as science is being created by humans, there's always going to be some side of bias. When there are new technologies made, if they're going to be like accessible to everyone, or if they're going to be made correctly, or like thought correctly, depending on the person, if that makes sense. Like, we're thinking of certain people being inferior as certain, like, beforehand, because we're like, oh, if as a society we think women are inferior, thinking of, we just write feminist mistake. If women are inferior, then like, oh, they have to be scientifically inferior, and then finding some evidence that goes with it. Just because maybe they're different, then we're using that as a, oh, because they're different this way, that's what's making them inferior, and that's what we're connecting it with. And now we have different biases, but it's always humans with our own thoughts of how we were born and how we were nurtured and lived and created in our experiences, like, bias, not biasing, changing science, if that makes sense. Like, science is not neutral, because we're the ones creating it. We're always going to have some thought behind it.
I agree with that. But what if we were to define science as, I don't know, I guess partially I think, Oscar, that that your definition of a final form of science is kind of a, for lack of a better word, a cop-out. Because the final form of science, I agree, is something that can always ask questions, but I think in that, like, it's always asking questions, and you're always challenging your beliefs, right? Like you kind of said, I think that, I would argue that makes science always evolving. Right? Like, if you're always challenging your beliefs, aren't you also challenging the belief of
science? Wait, it's like that saying, the one thing that doesn't change is change itself.
Right? So I think if we continually are trying to evolve and like look for better things and try and like level up our reasoning, then I think that science actually hasn't reached its final form. Mm-hmm. I would argue that science reached its final form, and that we don't need to keep asking questions about science. But Satchel wanted to comment first.
Please make your argument.
Oh, so I think Satchel has reached, or I think science has reached the final form.
Maybe Satchel has as well.
Not yet.
In the sense that today and for a long time, we reject premises that are not entirely true and proven. And I think we can see this even in like the theory of evolution versus like the law of physics, as the laws of physics being something that are essentially universal. And even when we get down to the quantum level and the laws of physics start to break down, we can change the definition of the laws of physics to fit this new term. So I still think science allows us to have this always changing, like, paradigm, right? That when something starts to break down, the laws of physics don't apply anymore to the quantum level. We can say, okay, well, that's the laws of physics for everything above the quantum level. But that's not redefining the science or the scientific process. It's just saying we only declare things that are affirmatively true, and if they are not true, then we reject them. As soon as the law of physics is no longer applicable to everything, we reject it as the universal laws of physics. We say it's the universal laws of physics as applicable to these things. And so when people, like, people can make scientific claims, but if there's nothing to back them up, then it's not science. Like, as you kind of said with this Tylenol autism example, like, people can call that science, but you could call anything science. And I think science, as people define it today, is this thing where if it's not true, it's not science.
Interesting. Well, I think that, you know, your definition of science is not dissimilar to what the Greeks were doing when they were creating the mythologies, you know? Like, when they saw lightning, they were like, oh, geez, that's my empirical data, so there must be Zeus. When they saw the sun, they were like, oh, that must be Apollo, right? The myth was the way that the ancient people, it was their belief system that they used to explain how the world works to them. And I guess if any time that we, and their mythology system is an evolving, form. It keeps on getting updated whenever they see, like, new things or new phenomena or not dissimilar to what we're doing when we're claiming that we're doing science. Are we just kind of wrapping ourselves in a very complicated and self-comforting myth after all?
I think that would be similar to what, like, going off of what Satchel meant of it has to be, like, reproducible. That would mean every time you pray to Zeus, he would listen to you and, like, have lightning. Or if you pray to Apollo, just because the sun is coming up doesn't mean Apollo is always listening, because what if there's, like, a solar eclipse the next day and then he's angry, then you don't know why he's angry, but you can't do anything about it. I don't think that's not, is a solar lunar eclipse. I don't think that's, like, a explainable thing. Like, I don't think that goes into the realm of science. That is more religion, as especially as they thought of them as gods anyway.
Right, but I think that ties back to the idea of human interpretation. It wasn't the idea that humans knew that the sun rising was a repeatable idea. Okay. It was, Apollo's pissed this day, that's why he didn't do this. Oh, something that I do not yet understand is motivating something I do understand. That is the causality here. Which I think connects back to our interpretation of science. We interpret fundamentally, like, every single, there's no such thing as, like, a 100% objectively true lab result. There's always human interpretation, there's human bias. And that, in turn, motivates the publishings we find in science. And I think there's always going to be that little bit, like, you can just infinitely dive deep of that little bit of causality, which is, okay, right now, this is how I understand it. And I think science is going to continuously circle back, and then as science builds on itself and studies validate and sort of reprove each other, they'll go to new heights and then find something that inevitably doesn't make sense, like it has for the last 30 years in the scientific community, and then studies are revised and updated. I think semantically it's really interesting to talk about the idea of science having a final form, because it seems like we're really associating science with, like, skepticism and like, constantly needing to be validated. And I feel like the idea of pure science sort of moves less and less away from the idea of faith, and more of the idea of things are so, our observations and our mindset on science is so closely tied to what the world objectively is, that we are, like, we cannot get any closer. But almost semantically, to have faith that we cannot get any closer goes against science, because science requires you to question everything and requires you to be skeptic. I think it really comes down to an idea of, I think like Sam talked about, like theory versus law. And that is the ideal, if we're looking at science saying, okay, this is where science was 100 years ago, this is where we're predicting it'll be 100 years from now, a million years from now, assuming we're still around then, this is where science will be in its close to final form. I think we can all sort of agree that it will become more and more skeptical, if not exactly as skeptical as it already is. I feel like that idea of skepticism almost runs counter to the idea of a law. And I feel like the idea of a theory of evolution, almost to what we've discussed today, lends itself much more to science. And the idea of having faith that something is 100% reproducible, and anything that you find counter to that, well, that's due to an erring human being, runs directly against our definition of science.
Okay, well, I know we've talked a lot about science in, like, Greek and mythology, as well as what science could be, but what about, I think, science in the modern day? How are we interpreting science and, like, how we have the faith in science? I know that Satchel's been talking about the recent thing of, like, Tylenol's causing autism, and a lot of things going on with the White House and the CDC of, like, laying a lot of people off, laying people who... I saw on LinkedIn today a lady who got laid off at Takeda, who's like senior engineer, random people who are getting laid off in the science world who do pure science, who have these degrees, who've done these literatures, but there's some type of faith that is not, some type of thing that's not being processed of science is not, we're like doubting science and not putting as much money into science and not caring as much into science and seeing what's going on.
Something I'd like to examine is this idea of science as an authority, kind of compared to science as a process. Because it's kind of what we've been dancing around this entire time. I think for a long time, in kind of this answer to like, is there a difference between, or have we reached the final authoritative state of science? Can be somewhat answered by science as a process and not as an authority. So I think as an authority, science will never be perfect, of course. There's always going to be more scientific discovery to be made, and even about things that we can be like 99.999% sure are true, there's always like more to explain. Again, going back to like the laws of physics, they're called laws for a reason, but there's still unexplained things. We don't know exactly how black holes work. We don't understand how the Big Bang came to occur. We don't understand how like what white or light matter and dark matter interact, right? So as an authority, science is never going to be perfect. But as a process, I think maybe we're getting close to our final authoritative state. And again, this is kind of where I go back to this idea that we just reject everything that's not deductive. And I think we can almost do the opposite with religion, where religion almost rejects anything that is objective. For example, while it's still debated somewhat today, most scholars will agree that there was an individual named Jesus Christ. And so the idea or the question is, you know, did Jesus Christ exist at some point? Is no longer a question of faith. It's a question of history. The question of faith is, you know, is Jesus Christ the Son of God? And so we basically remove the objectivity from religion. When examining it. That's why we call it faith, right? And I think science, we can take the opposite and say anything that's not objectively true is not science. And that process, I would say, is in its final authoritative state. Because that's ultimately what science is. And for a long time, that's not what science was.
I vehemently disagree. I think science shouldn't be an authority at all. I think that's the fundamental difference between science and I guess whatever it was before science, i.e. religion or something else. I think the power of science is that there is never something certain. Like you said, we can only be 99.9 or however many nines percent sure about something. There is never anything that's 100% certain.
I'm gonna cut you off. Define what you say. Science should never be an authority. Define what you mean by authority.
Yes. I think by authority, I mean that there is something indisputably true. I think there are... actually, I may need to walk back on that a little bit. But I think that I guess this is my thing, that the fundamental difference between science as an there are some things that we believe even through scientific method that is almost indisputably wrong. Gravity exists. The Earth revolves around the Sun, not the other way around. These are indisputable truths. And the Earth is a sphere in that, for that matter, right? These are indisputable truths. But I think we kind of arrive there with an empirical method. I guess that's what I was trying to get at. I think a lot of the times, trusting science as a process is a lot scarier than trusting something that can give you an answer right away. Mm-hmm. There is something comforting in knowing for certain that there is a life. There is something after death. There's a life after death. There is, right? I believing in the process in of itself is, in my opinion, a scarier thing, but I guess like what Sam said, a more final stage of what us as humans or as a society should have faith in.
I know Esther has a tangent she wants to go on in a second, but first I want to say I think I don't know if those discoveries you mentioned were inductively, like, people thought the Earth went around the Sun until they observed the universe and saw otherwise. And people thought the Earth was flat until Columbus sailed around it, right? Like, I think those were deductive discoveries.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said inductive.
No. I mean that's what I was saying, is that everything that's indisputable, using in our current, like, scientific context, were derived through deductive reasoning, okay. Not inductive reasoning.
I thought you said inductive
reasoning. Yeah, no. I meant deductive. I guess that's the thing. Yeah. Well, I guess another thing I was trying to say is just that there is, this is a giant tangent, but this almost makes me want to talk about existentialism.
I think go for it.
Cue Professor Paya Yorgrau at Brandeis University.
I think shoot for it. I think go for it.
I think this is the thing, is it's for existentialist or for whoever that doesn't believe or that is not religious, it's a lot harder to stomach the truth that, you know, or stomach their version of the truth that there might not be a meaning or anything to our life at all. Life is like a train. It came from nowhere and it's going to nowhere, all right? It ends after our death. These are all hard, hard things to swallow. And I think science both changed or shifted the paradigm from everyone believing in this indisputable truth of there is a life after death to some people painstakingly coming to a realization that maybe it's not so easy to find meaning in life. Maybe there's nothing in this world that you can
be so sure about that. I mean, I guess, you know, like I just said, gravity exists. That's an indisputable truth. But even then, our understanding of gravity has been flawed until Einstein exists, until Einstein came along, right? That it might still be flawed. It probably is flawed.
But we still don't know what causes gravity.
Yeah, yeah. So there are things that us as monkeys can observe and then deduct, but we just have to kind of be restlessly sitting there and accept the fact that we can never be 100% sure about anything in this world at all.
Yeah. I think to be human is to be comfortable with the fact of not knowing and trying to make the best bet of what we can through whatever process we can. But you're totally right that there are so many, I think, big questions that we need to answer, like, where do we come from?
What is... Well, I think Darwin answered that one for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great point.
But that, it's the theory, right? It's going back to where Sam was coming in from. It's not even a law. It's just a theory.
But isn't everything at the end of... If you're arguing that if something is created by humans, there's some inherent theory to it, then isn't the distinction between law and theory seemingly meaningless? If it's also a human construct, so you have... two constructs created by somewhat inherently flawed logic because it is human created, and then a third construct also created by humans meant to distinguish them, like, doesn't it all...
I have thoughts and responses, but I don't want to take up too much airtime.
True.
I think there is some of an inherent difference between a law and a theory, mostly pertaining to its universality. So, for example, I think if we went to a different planet and found a species there, or a multitude of species there, you know, an Earth-like planet, I think we could very confidently say that Newton's laws still apply on this planet. I don't think we could confidently say that they necessarily evolved through evolution. We need to find evidence of that first. I think we could assume that, but I don't think we could confidently say that. Versus we could definitely say, oh, you know, if we calculate the gravitational constants of the planet, throw a ball, then it's going to land in this spot.
Right. You don't think Newton's laws have our understanding of them, or the concept of Newtonian physics has, like, been born and changed over time? Of, like gravity itself changed over time through...
I don't think gravity... I don't think... Well, okay,
but you're saying you think our understanding of these topics has evolved over time.
I guess, like, what I'm saying is, like, they're Newton... Like, when Isaac Newton came up with them...
Right.
You know, he defined them, and gravity is, like, a part of, you know, his laws. But his law is, like, F equals MA, right? So gravity is an example of a force. But, that idea, F equals MA, has held true since he invented it. That simple fact has not changed. And I think if we were to go to, like, you know, the theory of evolution, it's a theory...
Right, but I think what Oscar was saying is to be human is to not... is to never be 100% certain on anything. I think plenty of people have, before Newton, lived their lives with whatever paradigm of science was popular at the time and 100% believed it. Yeah.
I think, to put the nail in the coffin, because I'm sure I'm right.
That's not very scientific of you.
No, I guess my thing is that I think there are three categories.
Right.
So we have the theory, we have the law, right, and then we have the objective truth. Is there an objective truth? I think there is. We can never know what's objectively true, because our understanding of the world...
Our interpretation.
Yeah, it's all our interpretation. It's all in our mind. I do believe that there is a way that the universe works, that there is a there are all these fundamental principles that the universe relies on to do whatever it does. We will never know for certain.
Who do you think did?
What's that?
Never mind.
No, please.
Knowing the fact that we can never be 100% sure, we defined the things that we are 99.99% sure as truth.
Right.
Those are the laws. Like what Sam said, F equals MA. In the ideal scenario, he has never failed us, right? There are so many things when people sailed around the world and then even went into the space, they realized that the Earth is a sphere. We're 99.9% sure that that's the truth.
Right.
But, and then there are the theories. Those, I think we're not even 99.99% true. We're not even sure that they're true. So, because maybe we can't collect data on them. They're not as experimentable. In the case of Darwin, I think the distinction that the scientists have made is that the fact of evolution, that things evolve, that organisms adapt to better suit the environment over generations, the fact that that happens is accepted as kind of like a fact in the scientific community. Most people agree that that happens. We do evolve. Things do evolve. But as to why it evolves, Darwin's theory of of origin of species, that's why it's a theory. It cannot be so easily proven that, oh, we all came from the same species. He can prove, we can know that evolution's happened, but it's a lot harder to know for certain that we all came from the same thing. So I guess that's the definition. Not to get too philosophical, but I think that's the definition between theory, our definition of law, and then the objective law that the universe operates on that I think we'll never be able to discover or know for certain.
So we're running with about 10 minutes left. We're going to switch into our final conversation topic. I think it'd be fun if we each give an answer to this. We've talked a lot about, science, how it is now, and how science was conducted in the past, and I think we might have different answers to this, we'll see. Is there a fundamental difference between science now and science in the past? I think we can use a lot of evidence, but I think we should just go around and give our yes or no answers and explain why. So, is there a difference between science now and science in the past?
Are you not going to answer it first?
Oh, I can answer it first. I think yes. I think using Darwin as a cutoff point is a great cutoff point. I think you can say, previous to Darwin, science was inherently connected with faith. I guess not directly, when Origin of Species was published, but in Darwin's Fallout, the idea that science and faith are intertwined was broken until science now is entirely secular. I think that is a big enough difference to definitively say there is a difference between science now and science in the past. I think there are many other arguments that could be made, but I'll save those for the rest of the table.
All right. I think the answer could only be yes. And I think Origin of Species is such an impactful book because it captures that moment in history where science transforms and where one scientific study impacts both society's interpretation of science and the way we as a culture and as a species practice and implement science, but also how a process changes. And I think even looking around the world today and looking at different laboratories and different scientists, the idea of science is constantly being reinterpreted and constantly changing. But it takes something like Origin, it takes something both deeply, I feel like, that humans are deeply invested in, and such as the idea of creationism and that causes them to care about it so much, but also the evidence and the process and the results, I think, resonating with society that causes everyone's interpretation, the paradigm, if I was a Rob Martello fan, I would say, to change. And I think that's what makes Origin such an interesting book to cover, because it is literally that piece of media, and I would argue the most recent piece of media, that caused that paradigm shift.
Interesting. I want to, since two people have said yes already, I'm so tempted to say no, that there's not a difference between science now and science in the past.
What a contrarian.
Right? But
truthfully, I don't know. I think it's hard to make that argument. I guess we've not arrived at a definition of science that we can all agree on throughout this conversation that's been, 50-something minutes. I think science then and science now have two different definitions. If you ask people back then what they thought science meant, that they will have a whole different definition than what we have to offer up today. But, you know, going back to my cop-out answer, that's how I'm going to make my argument. Yes, I don't believe there's a difference. Going back to my cop-out answer, science as a way of discovery has never changed. It's a cop-out, but bless you.
I almost made it.
I guess the people then in 1800s or even Plato, Aristotle, or whatever, they wanted to discover, they want to explain how the world works, and coming up with the best explanation that they've got. And in that sense, science hasn't changed. Throughout history, we've always been on the quest for more knowledge and for a better understanding of the world. You know, like Marx. Marx says that the history hitherto is a history of class struggle. I will go so far as to say that the history hitherto is a history for is a quest for more knowledge.
Well, I'm not gonna be like Oscar. I'm gonna echo Sam and Satchel that the answer is yes, that there's a difference of how we view science and how we do scientific experiments, in the sense that we know that there's always something new out there, and we know that not everything is truly set in stone, similar to what Oscar was saying, that there is an objective truth, but we don't know the reasoning behind it. And so if we don't know the reasoning behind it, then it can be challenged. And I think that is science now, of understanding that there's always something that can be changed, and always something that we can improve on, and always something that we can be learning as a society in the world of science.
And for the readers, if you're listening to this, why don't you go to...
For the readers.
Not the readers, the listeners.
Mm. The one listener.
I just thought that would be funny. The joke didn't really land.
I think I'd like to change my answer. I'd like to say no, actually.
Oh. What a contrarian. What a copycat.
Yeah, follows me.
I think different reasoning. I think you put your finger on something I didn't think about before, which is how we think about the scientists of old. I wonder if you would have given...
Bless you.
Maybe we can make a distinction between scientists and non-scientists. Because you have someone like Galileo, who uses deductive reasoning, essentially uses the modern-day scientific method to come to conclusions. Same with Newton. And, you know, they lock Galileo up for it. Could we say that perhaps Galileo is a modern-day scientist and he's using the same scientific methods and theories that we were today, but science just wasn't accepted back then? Mm-hmm. Like, if we're using that definition of science, then maybe it was true there were just less scientists, because science was effectively outlawed, or anything that went against the church was outlawed, and that happened to be a lot of science.
Well, yes, outlawed both, so I think access to education is so much easier now, and also, like, there's so many ways for someone to practice science and get involved in science as not necessarily like, I have a rich family and I was privileged to do this, or I was able to go to like the Galapagos Island and fuck around for like however long he was there and write.
Watch your language. That one didn't land as well. Wow. Okay. No response from the crowd.
I didn't know it was PG. My bad.
Rob, we don't usually swear.
No, never. Well, any last comments? We have, we're at 59 minutes and 22 seconds. We've got about 30 seconds more for commentary. Rob, if you made it through this whole thing, wow.
Wow. Yeah, please send us an email with the specific wording of, I made it through the whole thing, wowza.
Wowza. If he made it through the whole thing, I actually have a question for him. If you guys go onto the Canvas and you click the syllabus, Rob has a weird, like, recurring joke with like different sodas.
Yeah. Oh, vanilla like, Coke.
Vanilla Coke. Yeah. And then when I emailed him that I had food poisoning, he was like, be sure to have some ginger ale. And I guess I'm just curious as to what the next soda is going to be and where it's going to slide its way into class.
That's true. What's your favorite? Oh, yeah, Rob, please email us with your favorite soda if you've made it through this. Yeah.
Isn't ginger ale supposed to calm the stomach?
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait, I think it's probably why he suggested it.
That's not very scientific of him.
That's like such a...
I didn't know that.
Way, like black people, if you're sick, your dad tells you to drink it. Or maybe not.
Maybe kind of black thing.
I really
my parents told me that.
Well, he doesn't know.
Yeah, well, I'm a black. I thought this was just like another soda bit. I'm so sorry, Rob. I apologize.
Oh, I thought you were about to say told you to drink vanilla Coke.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Mm. Ginger ale, I think
that'd be very insensitive of him when Satchel tells him to...
I actually really respected it. I was like, this is really funny because everyone else was like, oh, get well soon. Rob was like, have some vanilla Coke. Like, try to make me laugh. I was like, oh, dude, what a sweet guy.
That's fair. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much to whoever is listening to this and then to all of our contributors tonight.
Yeah, big shout out to
the There's library. There's not halibut gum, is there? Isn't that a type of fish?
Halibut gum, yeah.
Halibut?
Barramunda. That's cod for fish.
All right, that's all for tonight.
Yeah, that's all for tonight.